You're listening to the WADT podcast, and today we'll be talking about a very interesting subject. Now, the perfect child, if there's such a thing in most parents' minds, is a well-behaved and obedient one who also does well in school. Now, driven by this vision, parents have resorted to a number of methods to have a perfect child. Now, with me today are my co-hosts, Hafiz, Kevin, and Fanny, and we will be discussing the right and wrong ways of getting children to obey. Welcome, everyone. Let's, you know, talk about the different ways that you have used to get your children to behave, right? And also to obey, especially. Some obviously have worked and some have not worked. So let's start with the husband, wife, father, mother team, Kevin and Fanny. Tell us, what have you tried in the past that worked or did not work, and what has changed?
Okay, maybe I'll go first. He's looking at me, right? Okay, one of the ways that I try to get our kids to comply, okay, not say obey, lah, to comply with what we're trying to say or tell them to do, is I try to explain to them. I'm a bit more loso, lah, but I'll bother to explain why we're doing this and the reason why we're doing that kind of thing, and try to break down the steps and try to give them a bit of detail on why they must, on what they must do and how they can go about doing it, lah. Yeah, so it's a hit and miss. Sometimes they take it, sometimes they don't. Yeah, so but this is one way that I try, lah, that to explain and to tell them why.
What's the difference between comply and obey?
Comply, maybe they're not willingly, lah, but obey is they do it willingly.
Okay, I thought they are the same. Never mind. All right, Fanny, what about you?
Yeah, so I personally, I feel that it's easier when they're younger. You know, I remember sending my children to naughty corners. Again, you know, there's research here and there that says, oh, maybe that's not so good or that's good. I don't know, lah. I don't know what's the latest research right now. But back then, you know, this was 12 years ago. I did use the naughty corner. So, yeah. And I thought, oh, quite easy. You know, they're small. You know, they can't really fight me. You just put them there and then, you know, you ask them to stay there, right? So, whether it's right, wrong, well, thankfully, it worked quite well for my boys. For my daughter, not so much, because she will just daydream in the corner and then she'll be, it doesn't seem to affect her very much. So, to be honest, I think it's not so much the right or wrong. It's really what works best for the individual child. You know, it's the same parents, same set of parents, Kevin and myself. But, you know, I realized that similar to being in organizations, similar to a family setting, everyone is unique. So it is really tailoring to what kind of discipline measures will work for the child and adjusting as we go along. Yeah.
Yeah, sending a child to the quiet corner for some children is like, yippee, now I'm left alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Hafiz? What was your experience like?
Yeah, on hindsight, those methods usually sometimes have long-term consequences. You know, like, for example, if you put them to a naughty corner, you're telling them that when you misbehave, you get to get out of my way, all right? I mean, that is one message that may be received rightly or wrongly. So what happens is the next time, they just get out of your way. And as you said, Fanny, it's easier when they are young, you are within, they are within your control. But once they grow up, you know, they have that tendency to get out of your way, really, you know, and get out of your sight and come back. You know, that will be sad, you know, and then you are out of control over their behavior and over them. So again, rightly said, we cannot put, one method to every child. I think we have to adjust and depending on the response, how each child responds to a certain approach.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I'd like to add to that as well, because while it's very true, you know, one method may work for this kid, but it may not work for the other kid. I think one other dimension that we also must be aware of is the generation as well. I guess we grew up in a generation when the parents say something, we don't question one. we just take it, we just do it, even though we don't like it or what, we just do it. Most of the time we are very compliant, most of the time we obey lah, right? But nowadays the children, this generation now, they have various ways of responding lah, you know. Some of them obey, some of them question, some of them rebel. Yeah, so it's very different now, the children. So we also must be aware of the times and how these children are. Maybe they're more informed or something, but they respond differently from us to our parents. Yeah, so there's something. So while it work from our parents to us, it might not work for us with our kids as well, if we apply the same method.
So I'll be honest to confess, yeah, that so my eldest now is 12 years old. Like this year, he's turning 12 this year. I think I did send him to a corner like a few months ago. So even, but I must confess that the reason why I did that is because I needed time out. I needed to calm down, and because I was just so annoyed, and I was hoping that some time apart would and allow him to sort of reflect and allow me to calm down as well. So sometimes I think that how do you decide what is right or wrong in terms of parenting techniques or getting children to obey, right? Also stems from our motivation and somehow also adjusting our expectations. Because motivation is in, like, you know, sometimes if it is out of anger or because we are rushing for time, you know, then we might actually deal a harder hand. But yeah, expectation as well. Sometimes, you know, when we say one of Parkson, you mentioned about perfect children, right? Again, you know, if we expect our children to be like perfect, actually it's very unreasonable because we are not perfect parents either. And sometimes we sort of want to live our dreams through our children as well. So again, that's also very... that's wrong lah.
I think that's how many parents view it, you know. I mean, if I have perfect children or at least very well behaved children, it reflects well on me. You know, on the contrary, if my children misbehave and, you know, are doing all kinds of vices and even worse still, crime, you know, it reflects badly on their upbringing, which reflects on me, right? You know, it tells people or gives people the impression I'm a bad parent. So that's why the pressure is there, you know, rightly or wrongly. I think this is unnecessary pressure. But that if that's how they perceive it, then that's how they will behave it, right? And they will just, yeah, feel the pressure to make their children be best behaved children in the world, so that, you know, they can be proud of themselves. I think the timeout approach, you know, it's one of the dangers of the timeout approach is that, you know, the child feels that love is being withdrawn by the parent, you know, and of course, it sends a message that, you know, this behavior is unacceptable and, you know, needs to be corrected. But you know, Fanny, you brought up that one about, you know, sending your 12-year-old or going to be 12-year-old son to the corner. I think it is a good example where parents sometimes need to send themselves to the quiet corner because we need to calm down, we need to soothe ourselves, yeah. Right? We need time out. Yeah. So I think I think we need to be more clear, you know, who actually needs the time out. If the parent is the one, then we just got to tell the child, right? I'm not, you know, I don't have the bandwidth, the capacity, the energy to deal with this right now, okay? So can you give me some time and some space? Yeah, I think that would be a better way because it also teaches the children how to communicate, right? How to be assertive, to tell people how you feel and what you need at that point of time, right? Rather than maybe taking it out on someone else.
So you actually said one thing. You were explaining, all right, you know, a parent's behavior, okay? So my question is, how early or how young or how old a child that we are able to explain certain approaches, certain punishments, certain actions taken? Is there a certain age, or, you know, it's never too young for us to explain so that they understand the rationale of us doing things?
Yeah, definitely. I think the reasoning is definitely a lot more nowadays, you know. The time required to sort of rationalize. But like Parkson mentioned earlier as well, like, we need to know ourselves. So recently, you know, I can't remember exactly what was it. I was irritated with my son, but I knew I was tired. So then Kevin, I can see that he was trying to find out where my son was coming from. So I allowed them to have that conversation and I just excused myself. So yeah, it's definitely, it has changed in terms of the techniques, so to speak. But I think it's very important that we are aware of where our, you know, like bandwidth, you know, how tired are we, the weather, you know, is this out of our own anger and or is it really that we are putting the child at the center and we really want him to learn something? Yeah, so it's usually a mix of everything. So just got to be mindful, I suppose. Yeah.
I remember what incident it is about playing the piano, but anyway, it's a domestic thing, yeah. But to answer you, Hafiz, I think there is no standard age, lah, so to speak, because just like how each method is different for each kid, right? Our children also cognitive level and understanding also different, right? So sometimes our 12-year-old also, like sometimes they also think, he also think very childishly, but sometimes my 10-year-old can get it, or even my 8-year-old can get it as well. So it depends on how well we explain, but also depends really on their maturity, lah, you know. But one of my friends actually told me, don't underestimate our kids, because you go ahead and just explain. If they get it, they get it. But if they don't, then in time they will, lah, you know. So he gave me an example of when one of the times when in the park and what his kid actually asked, Papa, what is this? His initial thought is, don't bother explaining to you because you're such a kid. It'd be too scientific for you. But then he thought, I'll just go ahead and try. Then he actually tried it, he explained it. And then the kid kind of got a little bit of it, the gist of it. But yeah, so he was very amazed. Actually, I thought my kid wouldn't get it. But when he tried it, and his kid actually got it. So same principle, I guess. So the children, if we explain. So one incident I can tell you about eating vegetables, right? We had to drill it in our kids when very young, right? Just eat your vegetables, yep. Right? The vegetable intake kind of thing. Just drill it in first. You don't understand, just eat first. You know what I mean? So to a point where now they just eat their veg without complaint because it's just drilled in already, kind of thing. Yeah. Whether they really understand it's good for them, it's not another thing. But yeah, they get it, lah.
Yeah. I think it's a important thing to explain your rules and, you know, from day one, even if your child doesn't seem to understand. Like, for example, you know, when your child is able to walk on his own, you know, one of the things you would tell the child is, you know, don't play by the roadside, you know, don't play near the road when you cross the road, you know, and things like that. Now, does the child fully understand? I mean, the child might understand the words that you're saying, but does he understand the dangers actually, you know? But you have to explain it anyway, right? So I think it's also important and useful to start this habit, at least from the parents' perspective. Is because, you know, if you don't have this habit, then the danger for the parent is to become very authoritarian, right? Just decree, you know, from today onwards, you know, nobody is supposed to do this and that's it, all right? Once it becomes a habit, it's hard to change. And when your child becomes a teenager or even a preteen, the explanation is actually the game changer, all right? Okay, so if you are able to explain it, okay, and share your rationale. What's the thought process behind it, behind your decision or your rule, all right? And if your teenager is convinced by your thought process, or at least your teenager sees that you have actually used your brain and you have, you know, it's not plucking something out of the air and something very random, but you have actually thought over it, maybe even agonized over it, and finally you have come to this decision or this, you know, rule, they really appreciate it, okay? And I want to tell you, that's half the battle won. Now, what's the second half of the battle? It's the compliance, all right? So they may appreciate, you know, and be very happy that you have actually thought about it, and they might even be impressed, you know, wow, daddy can think, you know? But compliance is the second story. It's totally different story. It's the second half of the battle, but it's half the battle won. So I would encourage parents to get into the habit from day one to explain your decisions, explain your rules. But it also, you know, it's also part of your helping your child develop these different skills, all right, of thinking, critical thinking, you know, of weighing the pros and cons, of communicating, and also of emotional intelligence. Because as you wrestle with, you know, certain decisions, all right, there are emotions involved. And as you share them, all right, you're actually helping your child learn to be able to identify and be aware of their own emotions when they are trying to, you know, solve problems and make a decision, for example.
Yeah, while you say all these things, I realized that I have four children, right? So I tend to treat my, elder one, because the elder one, you know, to mature faster, because, you know, they have younger siblings, you know. Then I realized actually maturity on our children depends on how we treat them, right? If you want to treat them to maturely, then they mature faster. And if we, you know, slack on them, then they will just take time to feel that they have responsibility, right? So I think we need to be conscious, regardless of the position of our children. If we have more than one child, we need to treat them, it's difficult to treat them equally, but to be conscious that the younger one need not be given always the slack, you know, while the older one is always given the responsibility. I think this boils down to another problem that most parents have, is to compare, you know, between children. You know, your brother, your sister can do it, why not you, and vice versa. Why are you not like him? Why are you not like her? You know, so that itself to me will teach them that, oh, you expect me to be like him, like her. So if I be like him, are you happy? But they realize that that's not him. That's not them, you see. And I think that is a problem that will become a problem, because then it's a deeper problem, because then the identity of the person is lost again, which I think is a bigger problem.
You know, one of the most common methods parents use to get their children to obey is rewards and punishment. I'm sure all of us have used one or both, probably both. What are some rewards and punishments you have used with your children?
So when they were younger, we did like sticker charts. So they would have to accomplish, but it's tailor-made because some of them are good at certain things. So those we don't consider effort, but it's an effort for someone else. So then only things that require effort, then we put it into, you know, different columns. Once they collect everything, then they can either claim like a, I don't know, food, something that they like to eat.
Screen time.
Yeah, screen time. Screen time is when they're older, lah. Like now they can claim screen time. but yeah, usually it's in these two forms, screen time and also food. Yeah.
All right, sweets and snacks and whatever they like, lah.
yeah, usually, yes.
Okay, how about punishments? You threaten them with punishments, you know, when you get home, you'll get it.
So there was this season, I think there was for a good 2 years or something, Kevin came up with this system of like rubber bands. But this was to empower, because during that season, we had a helper, Freta. So Freta was with us and, you know, we wanted to empower her to be able to discipline our children. But again, she wouldn't feel very comfortable to lay on them the kind of punishment that Kevin and I would. So what we did was, we already had this system before Freta. So, you know, when it carried on, it was actually very convenient, because we tell that, you know, every day, it's like a three strike rule. By the third strike, then you will kena lah. How they kena, that one is, you know, up to us to decide lah. Depends on how severe things are or how angry, like combination, right? So then actually we say like three rubber bands lah. By the third rubber, so in the day, so it gives Freta that kind of empower, you know, she's like, hey, you don't listen to me, then, you know, you will get one rubber band. So, you know, she will issue lah. So when the time we finish work and we come home, then we will hear like which children got three rubber band that we will need to deal with. The rest then, you know, if there's just one or two, okay, you know, you're off the hook. You reset for a new day. Yeah. So so we found
yellow card, red card.
Yeah, that's
exactly,
right.
Exactly, yeah. And every day reset lah. So they know that if I can make it to the day without getting three rubber band, right, then kana, then it's, when we're younger, especially, they're very visual, right? So you put the rubber band there, that, oh no, I only got one already, I got two already, nothing. So it's very visual for them to, okay, I need to hold the line, at least for today, tahan, then after that, tomorrow, reset again. So the rubber band's off, kind of thing. Yeah, so it's like a red card, yellow card kind of thing, yeah, for them to.
So did it work well?
Yes.
Yeah, pretty
well. So it helped my helper to feel like, you know, she has that authority. So not less frustrating for her, and for the kids to know that, hey, you know, don't play a fool just because your parents are not around, you know. Yeah, you need to toe the line.
So you have a system. Okay. So importance of having a system, when you so delegate so-called to another person, they follow the system. But that system, how long did it work? I mean,
we're still using it now.
Still losing out, okay.
Now, but not as diligently as before. I mean, Freta left us last year already. I mean, yeah, because Kevin and I, this kind of system requires enforcement. And because, so you need to be with the children to sort of, you know, but yeah, we still do it like at the end of the day, sometimes when we come back and then, you know, these guys just like, yeah, I don't know, create a ruckus or somehow seem to be bouncing off the walls, then yeah, then they were like, eh. And because they're older now, we say, two rubber bands now. By the second one, then you cannot already. So
so I see the effectiveness of this system because it's like a deterrent, right? And before they really do something bad, you know, you give them a warning. So it sort of worked to, I mean, until certain extent. So again, until when you use this system, the system has to change if, let's say, it stops working. So what plan do you have after this? You thought about it?
Don't fix what is not broken. So it's still working, so we are sticking with it. But I think we are, like I said earlier, like we are rationalizing a lot more, like reasoning a lot more, especially with my eldest boy. And of course, we understand that, you know, we also need to, so it's not just about punishment, right? You need to love. I mean, getting children to obey, they need to know that they are loved and all of that. That's why they will trust you and listen to you. And, you know, as they grow older, like Park Sun says, why should they trust you when they have Google on their hands, right? Why would you're no longer the source of all information? So they need to understand that they are very well loved. And so with that, and so I kind of not brainwashed, but, you know, sounds so horrible. But when they were younger, then I'll always tell them, remember, I love you very much. So trust me, okay? Yeah, so, but the system, I think it's just doing less and less with systems, so to speak, and more with reasoning and just having conversations. And also bringing people alongside, because sometimes the parents' voice might not be the only voice they want to hear. So, you know, my kids are close to their uncles and aunties. So then they will go and spend time with them. You know, we always encourage our siblings to sort of input into their lives, basically the uncles and aunties that input into their lives. And I will update them as well, like the kids are like this, and maybe they did something like this, or maybe, you know, they did something well, you know. So then I will invite the family to come alongside and journey with them. Because when you build that foundation right now, it's easier for them to input as they grow older. So that's my strategy.
So going back to your rubber band system, I assume that there are clear and specific rules, right? Not very random, because you know, only when they break the clear and specific rules do they get a rubber band. Am I right?
Clear specific rules are no. I mean, it's usually just you know, go and have lunch and, you know, listen when Auntie Freta tells you something. If it's time to do your homework, you go and do your homework, kind of thing. So it's not like a set out, like, you know, they know exactly. I mean, they have an idea, like maybe after school they need to come back and eat lunch and then shower and do homework, you know. So they ask that rough guideline.
We don't have a penal code, Parson. We don't have a penal code to say if you do this one, you cannot run Robin, do this one, cannot do. But usually, case by case, we will remind them also, if you persist in this attitude, you get a Robin. Then they get it. Then, okay. You know, then they, yeah. Or you are getting a bit hot tempered now. You're a bit edgy right now. You might want to watch your attitude before you continue the conversation. Yeah. It's not you get rubber band. So we give them a warning first before we give them a rubber band. It's a pre-rubber band warning, so to speak. So they kind of get it a little bit. Yeah. So they give them to help them to self check a little bit.
So what I'm trying to get at is that, you know, As parents, we have too many rules, and we make up rules along the way, and that sometimes that confuses children. And not only that, when you have too many rules, it's very hard to enforce them consistently. And consistency is one of the pillars of parenting, right? And so if you're not being consistent, then it can create confusion in the kids and sometimes even anxiety, right? Because they don't know what to expect next. So that's why I think it's, you know, I tell parents it's important to have very clear rules. Like you mentioned, Kevin, the penal code, right? Everything is written down black and white, the rules, and if the rules are violated or broken, even the consequences are spelled out very clearly. And this is what I would tell parents, you need to explain to the kids so they understand why. And, you know, underneath every rule, there are actually principles and values that you want to inculcate in your children. So rules are not just for the sake of rules. Rules, there is a purpose for a rule. It's kind of a, you know, a killing two birds with one stone, all right? You're trying to get the best behavior of your kids, but at the same time, for the long run, you want to inculcate certain values or principles into them so that the day when, you know, the rubber bands are no longer, you know, around, no parents are no longer around, they will still continue with that good behavior because they understand that there is a value behind it, right? And there are benefits behind it. Yeah, so that's, I think, what I would say that parents should think about doing, like, rather than just, as long as you're not obeying me when I tell you to do something and you don't do it, you know, the third time I tell you to do the same thing and you don't do it, you get one rubber band. That's not a very good system in that sense, you know, because all they do is they obey out of fear and to escape punishment. And that's what people would call extrinsic or external motivation. So what we want to build in our children is actually the intrinsic, the internal motivation, doing what is right because it is right.
Yeah.
Your thoughts, Hafiz?
Yeah, definitely. I think I also have this experience. Whenever we want them to do something, right, we tend to maybe get them at the wrong time, one thing, and then we tend to repeat, okay, and repeat. I think the problem with repeating is that it becomes naggy, and they will not follow whatever you say. So I think we need to sometimes be wise to say things in a way that we'll get the attention, that's one. Do not repeat the instruction. Try to get it. Make sure they follow the first time. That means if you keep repeating, they will wait for you for the 10th time, then they will do it and it becomes a habit. Then I think the one is about following through, right? So for example, even we have rewards, we have punishment, right? Sometimes we overestimate our punishment level. We overdo it. We over-punish or over-promise, you know, over-threatening. Even the word threatening is bad. And then we don't do it because it's not possible. It's not practical. So it becomes counterproductive, right? So again, if we need to take it step by step and make sure that every step is done in such a way that it's effective. I thought this is useful.
Yeah, Fanny always reminds me that the punishment that we want to emit out must match the crime, lah, so to speak. Yeah, because there was a period of time when out of my anger, like when homework was not done, I was very teacher report homework not done, then I used the cane kind of thing. But no, homework and cane, you know, shouldn't really go together, so to speak, you know, that doesn't really match, lah, right? So we need to match the punishment with the crime. But having said that, also when we discipline our kids, so Dr. Parkson was saying that when we send kids to naughty corner, then there's the flip side of it is the kids may feel that we reject them or we push them away, kind, right? So one of the things that we have always done after every naughty corner, for example, we will process with them and then we allow them a chance to apologize, and then we always hug and always reaffirm them that we mama love you, that kind of thing. So we always hug after to release them from the naughty corner is to hug them. Yeah. So again, to just to remind them that they are loved. Nah.
Oh, yeah. Kevin, you use the four-letter word. Cane.
What? Cane?
You have cane. A
cane, huh? Now what no more.
It's a four-letter word. Cane, lah. What were you thinking?
I thought hate. You thought you said hate.
Okay, I'll censor that word out later on.
No, because I used it before, but I'm very aware. All right, the cane is not supposed to be used to beat the child. I mean, I don't know, then I use it as a form of deterrent again. I hang it there. In fact, the cane is such a bad shape because I usually beat the ground with something else, not the child, you know. So I don't know, this is probably another topic for us to discuss. Yeah, but definitely we need to use the cane sparingly and properly and not out of anger, out of, again, they will be scared of the cane, but not of the and don't understand why they are afraid of, actually, if we use too much of anything as a threat or as a tool.
Now, growing up, you know, we gonna cane lah. We will have cane and hanger and all that. Different equipment, right? Whatever that's needed.
Yeah.
So I remember when we had kids, I know that I felt that I only wanted to smack with my hand, because I can adjust my own strength. Because you can tell, ma, if you smack too hard, also your hand painful, you know. So you kind of will be more mindful of your strength level. And usually I tend to take over from Kevin because I know he's stronger. So I tend to want to do the discipline and get him to step aside when it's time to punish. But so the cane for us, it was a very interesting time when my sister came to visit. And then she asked me, she said, you know, she brought a cane with her. And she's like, hey, I can leave it for you. You want? And that time I was dealing with my daughter. So my boys are easier for us to sort of control, especially when she was younger. La. Now she's better. She's definitely grown to be, you know, a very sweet girl. La. But back then, well, I tell you, this girl was driving me nuts. So when my sister offers, like, you know, I can leave the cane for you, I'm like, okay, let's try. You know, it's like a deterrent. But we did use it. So again, I confess, it's like much of some confession box here, right? So we did use it. On occasions, I must say, but like Kevin said, it's a different season now, and it's not something we want to use. And hopefully, yeah, we don't have to use so much. That it's more to sort of threaten, but like Hafiz said, also threaten also need to be very sparing as well. So not easy being parents, lah. That's probably my summary.
Yeah. So Paksan, what do you think? What? How do we use the cane, or should we not use the cane?
Well, I just met a father. 2 weeks ago, where, you know, he has a 14-year-old son, but a few years earlier, previously, he was punishing his son for something, and so he used a cane, and he was really angry, right? And so, at that moment, he, instead of hitting the son with the cane, he hit himself, he hit his leg, lower leg, and, you know, just one time, it was so hard that he started to bleed. You know, and when the son looked at it and he says, wow, you know, that's how much it hurt daddy. You know, what I've done really hurt him. And, you know, he was so angry. He didn't hit me, but he hit himself, you know, and just one hit and he was started to bleed. And he said from that day on, every time the son, you know, was misbehaving or mischievous, he didn't have to even bring out the cane. All he needed to do was use his hand to, you know, rub his leg. To remind the son, remember what happened that day?
That's a unique
Now, of course, this is a one in a million kind of story, lah. Okay. But just to share some research, you know, latest research, and there was more than one. Caning, spanking is actually considered, it is as damaging to the child in terms of the mental health and, child abuse, okay? All different kinds of other childhood adverse experiences, all right? So we should try not to use spanking, use the cane at all right? And I think one thing we need to make clear to parents, and I keep repeating it, is that discipline is not the same as punishment, okay? Even if you go back to the root words in Latin, they are very different. Punishment is punitive, discipline is constructive. Discipline is to teach. Punishment is usually just parents' way of venting their anger and frustration. You know, they feel very inconvenienced, they feel very frustrated, and they want the child to know and feel exactly how they're feeling. And so they use punishment, especially, you know, the physical kinds, so that the child will know, this is how angry I am right now. So that's why it's bordering on child abuse. In fact, it is considered child abuse. Okay. And I just want to end by just also talking about rewards and punishment. Rewards and punishment actually is known by this term called operant conditioning. Okay, OPERANT, operant conditioning. It's something that was popularized by Sigmund Freud. If you have heard this name before, you know, he is a very weird guy. You know, he says that, you know, human behavior, all right, can be modified, all right? And so he came up with this theory of rewards and punishment. And the experiments were actually carried out with rats and dogs, okay? Where, you know, they were conditioned to certain behaviors. And so now we have actually translated that, or, you know, transported it into parenting. So I was wondering, I said, are we training dogs, or are we raising children? Okay, so if you're training dogs, that's fine, you can use rewards and punishment. But if you're raising children, that's not the right way to go. So I think I just want to put it out there to help people understand, you know, that's where all these parenting methods come from. Okay, and that's why it's important for us to unlearn those things and learn the right ways of teaching our children and getting them to obey.
Thanks for sharing.
All right, as you can see, this topic is a very big one, and I don't think we will ever end talking about it. But it has been fun, and so I want to thank you all for your contributions. And well, have a nice weekend, and we'll see you in the next time.
All right, see you.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.